You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Communities from Soweto to Midrand are repeatedly plunged into darkness, literally, often struggling with power outages, damaged infrastructure, and mounting hostility towards technicians. The NGO Right to Protest reports that the route isn't merely load shedding, but rather one of broken promises, vandalism, and maybe most importantly, a collapse of meaningful engagement. I want to discuss that in a little more detail. I'm in conversation now with Omhle Ntshengila, who is Engagement Officer at Right to Protest. Omhle, thank you very much for joining me. First of all, how would you summarize the current scope of social unrest nationwide? My understanding is something in the region of 27 to 30 protests a day. That's very high.
Yes, it is quite high. As the Right to Protest project, we do a lot of monitoring that indicates that it might be higher actually in South Africa. The number of protests that have been recorded are protests that people give notice to the police or traffic departments or any other presiding officer in the region, and the collective number that they have or any protest that the police responds to, that's the number that's actually there. But what about other protest action that is not recorded by the police or private security that happens often in communities? And that's the feedback we get on our hotline that we run as the Right to Protest project.
Now, it's interesting to read from your work that many communities first attempt dialogue before embarking on protest. In your experience, then, how successful have these formal engagements been before an actual protest begins, gets underway?
So we've noted that, and we also encourage this with the communities that we work with, that it's good to engage in dialogue before to see what negotiations can happen with the states or any corporates that people have dissent towards in their communities. And this has not been very helpful because a lot of state actors in those communities or political actors shy away from taking accountability when they are held accountable by communities or individuals or activists. Then this then creates a very hostile environment between the state or any corporate in those communities that results in really unfortunate situations. And we've seen that a lot of municipalities don't answer memorandums on time. They don't answer emails or even respond to meeting requests by communities when it comes to service delivery, especially service delivery in areas.
Is there a tipping point, something that shifts dialogue into blockades and violent protests then?
It's exactly that. It's the frustration of not being heard. It's the frustration of being overlooked or ignored by really the state when it comes to communities. It's really, that's just the tipping point. We always advise communities to keep the communication that they send to states. And I can tell you many times municipal officers and managers just don't respond to communities or literally out just ignore them. And then this then becomes an issue. And we really need all players within, you know, societal ecosystem to assist communities to get a response from governments before things actually go too far.
And then what happens is that the anger, the aggression is turned towards technicians. We've read reports of hostage situations. Mm-hmm. How widespread is this? And it also sends out a very strong signal, doesn't it, about trust in public services.
And this really does happen, especially to technicians from Eskom or any water supply chains from governments, where then they feel that brunt of frustration from community members because they're the only access that they have to governments and keeping governments accountable. As much as we do discourage any sort of violence as the Right to Protest project, we also understand why communities turn to the solution. But we've also seen a success, you know, from community members where, with business partners, where community members come to business partners and say, hey, please assist us in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so that situations don't also affect your businesses in communities. And we've seen how business has been so important in facilitating those engagements between the state and citizens to not only just protect citizens from abuse from the state, but to also protect, you know, the community and the progress of how far they've come just to live in harmony with each other.
How do you respond to authorities who argue these protests harm service delivery rather than help it? And I'm just wondering if there are examples where protest has actually led to tangible improvement.
They have. We've seen quite a lot of success when it comes to protests that have really led to water being delivered in communities. This is happening in Limpopo. In the northwest, we've seen how also communities blockading towns have brought more engagements between MEC offices and legislative offices into like smaller villages as well. And even though, as we say, that destruction is not good, however, this has been the only language that government has seem to understood from community members. But we always say that the state has a responsibility to really look after their communities way before even protests happen. If communities email a municipal manager and they say, hey, we have an issue, it's the state's responsibility to respond immediately or have communications, open communication lines to respond to those issues immediately before they get out of hand.
And why do you think the state fails in that response?
I really do think it's institutionalized corruption. It's a lack of accountability coming from the state. And it's also a lack of foresight. I'm seeing that dialogue is important to the growth of communities. It's important even to the growth of opportunities within that communities. And rather seeing dissent as an opportunity to improve, an opportunity to be held accountable, government always sees it as an attack on their leadership and their egos. So it's really more than anything, it's just a lack of foresight and not wanting to be held accountable by their citizens and people who vote them into power.
And what is particularly disturbing about this trend is that community frustration and protest is one thing, but often that gives way to criminal opportunism.
Most definitely. We've seen that some of you, in any situation where there's chaos, there are those who want to take advantage of the situation. And we've seen that during the July unrest, when there were really genuine outcries around poverty, unemployment, especially during COVID, and how that July unrest was really captured by political, you know, people who really wanted to take advantage of the situation and bring in criminality into genuine struggles. And that sometimes does delegitimize, you know, protest action coming from communities. But organizations like ourselves are working really hard to ensure that that sort of criminality doesn't happen, but that communities can also spot it and report it immediately, and to differentiate themselves between those that are doing acts of criminality and protesters who are really protesting for genuine issues.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Omhle Ntshengila, Engagement Officer at the NGO Right to Protest.